Then I saw what was wrong with the world. I saw what destroyed men and nations, and where the battle for life had to be fought. I saw that the enemy was an inverted morality, and that my sanction was its only power. I saw that evil was impotent, that evil was the irrational, the blind, the anti-real, and that the only weapon of its triumph was the willingness of the good to serve it. Just as the parasites around me were proclaiming their helpless dependence on my mind, and were expecting me voluntarily to accept a slavery they had no power to enforce, just as they were counting on my self-immolation to provide them with the means of their plan, so throughout the world and throughout men's history, in every version and form, from the extortions of loafing relatives to the atrocities of collectivized countries, it is the good, the able, the men of reason, who act as their own destroyers, who transfuse to evil the blood of their virtue, and let evil transmit to them the poison of destruction, thus gaining for evil the power of survival, and for their own values, the impotence of death. I saw that there comes a point in the defeat of any man of virtue when his own consent is needed for evil to win, and that no manner of injury done to him by others can succeed if he chooses to withhold his consent. I saw that I could put an end to your outrages by pronouncing a single word in my mind. I pronounced it. The word was, no. I quit that factory. I quit your world. I made it my job to warn your victims and to give them the method and the weapon to fight you. The method was to refuse to deflect retribution. The weapon was justice. If you want to know what you lost when I quit and when my strikers deserted your world, stand on an empty stretch of soil in a wilderness unexplored by men, and ask yourself what manner of survival you would achieve and how long you would last if you refused to think, with no one around to teach you the motions, or if you chose to think, how much your mind would be able to discover. Ask yourself how many independent conclusions you have reached in the course of your life, and how much of your time was spent on performing the actions you learned from others. Ask yourself whether you would be able to discover how to till the soil and grow your food, whether you would be able to invent a wheel, a lever, an induction coil, a generator, an electronic tube. Then decide whether men of ability are exploiters who live by the fruit of your labor and rob you of the wealth that you produce, and whether you dare to believe that you possess the power to enslave them. Let your women take a look at a jungle female with her shriveled face and pendulous breasts, as she sits grinding meal in a bowl hour after hour, century by century. Then let them ask themselves whether their instinct of tool-making will provide them with their electric refrigerators, their washing machines, and vacuum cleaners, and if not, whether they care to destroy those who provided it all, but not by instinct. Take a look around you, you savages, who stutter that ideas are created by men's means of production, that a machine is not the product of human thought, but a mystical power that produces human thinking. You have never discovered the industrial age, and you cling to the morality of the barbarian eras, when a miserable form of human subsistence was produced by the muscular labor of slaves. Every mystic had always longed for slaves to protect him from the material reality he dreaded, but you, you grotesque little atavists, stare blindly at the skyscrapers and smokestacks around you, and dream of enslaving the material providers who are scientists, inventors, industrialists. When you clamor for public ownership of the means of production, you are clamoring for public ownership of the mind. I have taught my strikers that the answer you deserve is only, try and get it. You proclaim yourself unable to harness the forces of inanimate matter, yet propose to harness the minds of men who are able to achieve the feats you cannot equal. You proclaim that you cannot survive without us, yet propose to dictate the terms of our survival. You proclaim that you need us, yet indulge the impertinence of asserting your right to rule us by force, and expect that we, who are not afraid of that physical nature which fills you with terror, will cower at the sight of any lout who has talked you into voting him a chance to command us. You propose to establish a social order based on the following tenets: that you're incompetent to run your own life, but competent to run the lives of others; that you're unfit to exist in freedom, but fit to become an omnipotent ruler; that you're unable to earn your living by the use of your own intelligence, but able to judge politicians and to vote them into jobs of total power over arts you have never seen, over sciences you have never studied, over achievements of which you have no knowledge, over the gigantic industries where you, by your own definition of your capacity, would be unable successfully to fill the job of assistant greaser. This idol of your cult of zero worship, this symbol of impotence, the congenital dependent, is your image of man and your standard of value, in whose likeness you strive to refashion your soul. It's only human, you cry in defense of any depravity, reaching the stage of self-abasement where you seek to make the concept human mean the weakling, the fool, the rotter, the liar, the failure, the coward, the fraud, and to exile from the human race the hero, the thinker, the producer, the inventor, the strong, the purposeful, the pure. As if to feel were human, but to think were not. As if to fail were human, but to succeed were not. As if corruption were human, but virtue were not. As if the premise of death were proper to man, but the premise of life were not. In order to deprive us of honor, that you may then deprive us of our wealth, you have always regarded us as slaves who deserve no moral recognition. You praise any venture that claims to be non-profit, and damn the men who made the profits that make the venture possible. You regard as in the public interest any project serving those who do not pay. It is not in the public interest to provide any services for those who do the paying. Public benefit is anything given as alms. To engage in trade is to injure the public. Public welfare is the welfare of those who do not earn it. Those who do are entitled to no welfare. The public to you is whoever has failed to achieve any virtue or value, whoever achieves it, whoever provides the goods you require for survival, ceases to be regarded as part of the public, or as part of the human race. What blank out permitted you to hope that you could get away with this muck of contradictions, and to plan it as an ideal society, when the no of your victims was sufficient to demolish the whole of your structure? What permits any insolent beggar to wave his sores in the face of his betters, and to plead for help in the tone of a threat? You cry, as he does, that you are counting on our pity. But your secret hope is the moral code that has taught you to count on our guilt. You expect us to feel guilty of our virtues in the presence of your vices, wounds, and failures. Guilty of succeeding at existence, guilty of enjoying the life that you damn, yet beg us to help you to live. Do you want to know who is John Galt? I am the first man of ability who refused to regard it as guilt. I am the first man who would not do penance for my virtues or let them be used as the tools of my destruction. I am the first man who would not suffer martyrdom at the hands of those who wished me to perish for the privilege of keeping them alive. I am the first man who told them that I did not need them, and until they learned to deal with me as traitors, giving value for value, they would have to exist without me as I would exist without them. Then I would let them learn whose is the need and whose the ability. And if human survival is the standard, whose terms would set the way to survive? I have done by plan and intention what had been done throughout history by silent default. There have always been men of intelligence who went on strike in protest and despair, but they did not know the meaning of their action. The man who retires from public life to think, but not to share his thoughts, the man who chooses to spend his years in the obscurity of menial employment, keeping to himself the fire of his mind, never giving it form, expression, or reality, refusing to bring it into a world he despises, the man who is defeated by revulsion, the man who renounces before he has started, the man who gives up rather than give in, the man who functions at a fraction of his capacity, disarmed by his longing for an ideal he has not found, they are on strike against unreason, on strike against your world and your values. But not knowing any values of their own, they abandon the quest to know. In the darkness of their hopeless indignation, which is righteous without knowledge of the right, and passionate without knowledge of desire, they concede to you the power of reality and surrender the incentives of their mind, and they perish in bitter futility, as rebels who never learn the object of their rebellion, as lovers who never discovered their love. The infamous times, you call the Dark Ages, were an era of intelligence on strike, when men of ability went underground and lived undiscovered, studying in secret, and died, destroying the works of their mind. When only a few of the bravest of martyrs remained to keep the human race alive. Every period ruled by mystics was an era of stagnation and want, when most men were on strike against existence, working for less than their barest survival, leaving nothing but scraps for their rulers to loot, refusing to think, to venture, to produce, when the ultimate collector of their profits and the final authority on truth or error was the whim of some gilded degenerate sanctioned as superior to reason by divine right and by grace of a club. The road of human history was a string of blankouts over sterile stretches eroded by faith and force, with only a few brief bursts of sunlight, when the released energy of the men of the mind performed the wonders you gaped at, admired, and promptly extinguished again.